Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. We have a very special guest. You saw him on College Game Day last year. You saw him winning a game that got put together in 72 hours. Jamie Chadwell from Coastal Carolina. He's already done with spring practice. That's how ahead of the curve Jamie Chadwell is. The rest of you are planning your spring practices. He's done. So how, Coach, how was spring practice?
You know what? It was a little colder than normal. It was actually pretty good. You know, we do go early typically. I went a lot earlier this year because I was our university pushed our spring break back, and I was worried that once we got to spring break, they might not bring our players back. And so I wanted to make sure we could get that spring in again. And I thought it was beneficial for us last year and also get our lifting in. So, but it's been good, and we're enjoying the nice weather now. You know, we don't have to practice, and I think our coaches are getting their golf games going.
Hey, well, you got old players. This is not a lot of teaching that has to be done. So basically, you guys lost two players to the NFL, and just about everybody else, because they were allowed to come back, came back. So how veteran a team are we talking about here?
Well, you know, on paper, we're going to have 20 of 22 starters back, and the majority of those will be juniors or higher. Obviously, with the super seniors, so we are bringing back a lot of people that have played a lot of football. And the thing that I'm excited about is that, but I do think our younger players, the ones that are freshmen, redshirt freshmen, sophomores, there's a lot of talent there that I think will have opportunities to let that shine through this year. And that during spring, that's really what we did, is try to see who was going to be able to help us fill some needs here or there, be a change up, whatever it may be. I'm excited about their development, what they're doing.
Well, speaking of young players, I was scrolling through Twitter right before we got started and saw a couple guys saying that they'd recently gotten offers from you guys. I'm curious when obviously you still can't bring people to campus for recruiting, but you got this huge bump in notoriety. I mean, people who had never seen Coastal Carolina play football before either saw you guys beat Kansas last year, or they watched the Louisiana game in prime time, or they watched the BYU game or saw you on game day. How many doors does that open when you're either calling a high school coach or calling a recruit and saying, hey, we'd like you to consider us?
It's been tremendous. You know, during the season, most of our 20 class or 21 class was done, you know, for the most part. And so you didn't really see a bump there. But now with the 22s, our name recognition gets us in the door. There for a long time, you know, you'd have to explain where you're at and what conference, all those things. And not only for us, but I think our Sun Belt, I think the conference really took a step up as well last year from just a national recognition. And it's fun to be a part of, because, you know, you work hard in recruiting and you're trying to get the very best players and fit. And now because of being more recognized, that it makes it easier to get in there. Doesn't make it any easier to get them still, you know.
Right.
But at least we're in it now. You know, you always felt like you're always behind because you had to try to explain who you were. And now that name recognition is such where, hey, oh yeah, I saw you. They can share. I had a quarterback that we love who is a really good player. He's like, hey, Coach, I watched every game y'all played last year.
Wow.
That doesn't happen. You know, and so that's more than just him has said that, you know. And so that's been big for us, and you know, and as we continue to try to develop our program.
So you've been at a bunch of places where you've had to explain, hey, here's who we are. North Greenville. I don't think there's a lot of people outside the state of South Carolina that know where that is. Charleston Southern.
Tigerville.
That's Tigerville. Right. That's right. Charleston Southern. Everybody knows where Charleston is. Yeah. But how often did you get College of Charleston? They have football or the Citadel, or how often did you get that?
You got that quite a bit, because you had to explain, you know, they heard Charleston, and then they didn't, you know, some people think Charleston, West Virginia, and then you put the Southern in there and you're trying to figure out where the Southern came from, because we were actually in North Charleston.
I was going to say you were North Charleston.
Yeah, I was in right. North Charleston. So, you know, and so that's part of it, you know, really explaining what you're, you know, part of. But I, you know what, I think that it gave us a lot of experience on how to build a program when you don't have a lot of that recognition, what you have to do to try to do it. I believe all those journeys or all those stops along the journey were beneficial to, you know, where we're at right now.
Well, so I wanted to talk to you about how you wound up getting where you are, because you replaced a guy named Joe Moglia, who, you know, for those who follow college football closely, they know this is the guy who, former CEO of Ameritrade, when he stepped out of the business world, he volunteered at Nebraska and kind of learned the ropes of the modern game, and then wound up taking over the program at Coastal. He decides, okay, I may not have much longer here, brings you on as the OC, you're going to become the head coach. But how was it that he determined you were the guy that he wanted succeeding him?
You know, the thing that I can here's a crazy story. One, we were competitors, obviously, Charleston Southern,
because you were in the same league before they
were in the same league. We're in the Big South, and we're obviously should be a natural rivalry because we're 2 hours from each other, but we really hadn't beat them, you know, tons. And then we were able to take over at Charleston Southern, and he was here in his heyday at Coastal, where they were top five, number one in the country, and we were able to beat them 3 out of 4 years. And I think he saw what we had, or maybe what we didn't have there, and knew what he had here. And I think he felt like, because Coach Mogul is very, he's calculated, he detailed, he goes in and he wants to, he's very big on what he wants his program to look like. And I think we shared, you know, obviously similar philosophies, and we got to know each other through meetings and stuff. But a great story about it, we're playing them in 2015 for to be first in the conference, really to win the conference on Halloween night. I remember vividly, we're having visitors, you know, recruits come the day of the game. And at Charleston Southern, we didn't have a building for them to sit in. So they're sitting in the stands. Well, lo and behold, Coach Mobley is in the stands with the recruits above, just listening to our whole recruiting pitch.
He was reading a book or something,
I knew he was up there, you know, because yeah. I saw him. And I told one of our coaches, I said, should I ask him to leave or what, you know? And I didn't. And he sat there and listened to it. And he jokes with me today. He goes, hey, I was going to ask a question and say, hey, this is the place y'all need to come, except Coastal Carolina. That's what he said. That was the joke he was going to use. But he sat in there he's been, you know, tremendous. And I think he, you know, valued what we did there, and fortunate enough for him to, you know, believe in us enough to say, hey, I want you to be a part of this and learn from him, which I did, and try to carry on the legacy that he left.
I'm glad you didn't throw him out. It could have been completely different.
You know, I could have. Hey, what are you doing here? Get out. thankfully I had a calmness, you know, because typically sometimes you got the opposing coach over there, but if now knowing him a lot more and who he was, you know, then I knew him, but not as well as I do now. That's exactly him. You know, he tries to find before games, you know, he tries to find a spot to go read a book and do some different things of this nature just to try to get his mind off of a game for a little while until it. So it was that was an interesting day for sure. And our coaches were poking me and saying, hey, should we do this? Should you tell him? Let's just roll with it.
We'll be right back after these words.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
You've got this offense, and we had a really detailed breakdown of the offense at the Athletic this week, explaining, you know, how you guys have succeeded and what you guys do. But this is the interesting thing I always get, because when I bring up the option to anybody, it's one of two things. Football guys love the option just because they know how hard it is to stop. But athletic director types are like, oh, but the option doesn't sell tickets. You can't, it's not good on TV. It doesn't look good. You run the option, but you run it out of the shotgun. You throw the ball. You know, how is it that you guys have managed to make the option look like fun and be as much fun as it is to actually play in if you're running just a more standard triple option under center?
Well, you know, that was part of the reason, and I say we created, I don't know if we created or not, but you steal from other people, but you try to make it your own, you know, and I was a former quarterback, not a good one, but I was a former quarterback, and you know, as quarterbacks, you love to throw the ball. But also I knew as a head coach, hey, how can we give ourselves a chance to win games each and every Saturday, but also still be able to bring in who we feel like are top players that want to be a part of what we're doing and can showcase their talents. And it started out of necessity. You know, you mentioned, you know, North Greenville and all those places. We had 17 scholarships there and a 36 scholarship league. And so to line up and do whatever, it wasn't going to work. And so you had to do something different to give yourselves a chance. And then Charleston Southern, we had 54 scholarships and 63 scholarship league. And so as you try to move, you start thinking, hey, I've got to do things to try to overcome that gap. And then now that we're here, we've continued to evolve it to where, hey, we do have 85 like everybody else. And you can try. And so how can I have it evolve, still keep those principles and still people make them have to defend what we're doing and all those things. And also put our 5'9" centers and all those people and give them a
chance. That's exactly Sammy Thompson.
Right. Exactly. Give them a chance to block people, still give them opportunities to succeed, but also have fun, be explosive, do the things that you see a lot of other people doing. And we try to evolve with whether it's RPOs or whatever it may be, but also we're never going to lose sight of the principles that we have that give ourselves a chance. And so we try to be creative as we can each week. But at the end of the day, you know what, we go back to, all right, this guy here, our tight end is pretty good. How do we get him the ball? You know, right. Here's pretty good. And then we try to, you know, create it around what our base identity wants to be. And then I think you saw it when we had a quarterback, obviously it's really good, but then you could saw how open, how exciting, how explosive it can be. But also, if you look at the BYU game, you know, I share this all the time, BYU game, we had to run the ball to try to win it and keep their quarterback off the field. We threw the ball a total of 85 yards that game. And we held the ball 36 or almost 40 minutes. Then the next for 321 yards, you know, versus Troy. So that's the beauty of it. We're not married to one little deal. Oh, if they can't run it, they can't score. That's how we've tried to evolve with it.
Well, and you also have brought two backs back into fashion because, you know, for the longest time, it one back offenses were the rage in college football. And you guys used two. I would imagine that gives you a lot more versatility. One thing I learned reading that story that we had on the offense is, you know, defenses can't set based on where your back's lined up because you could be running in either direction and you don't have to do a lot of motion to get into that.
That is correct. We do use typically more two back than most people. I don't know if anybody, maybe Wisconsin, you know, running their power, yeah, those things, you know, some of the people that still do that.
Your two backs are a little bit different.
Ours is a little bit different. Yeah. We're not downhill, but, and the thing about that is too, and that's sometimes we'll start it out with necessity as well, because when you're as a recruit, when you first hear, well, their option, well, receiver's like, oh, I ain't going there. Right. Yeah. But running backs are saying, let's go. And so what you can do is you try to create it based off of that. Hey, we can get some really good running backs that can catch the ball out of the backfield, et cetera. Like our running back that just left, you know, the last 2 years, he's had over 60 plus catches and almost 700 yards just out of the backfield with his rush. So we try to be creative with those guys and get them in space. But if we can base out of that defense, as you mentioned, you know, which way they run on the one, well, we can't set our blitzes based off of which side the back, et cetera. And that's what a lot of people do, where your back is. And so, again, that we feel like, does that slow the defense down? Does it make them think a little bit? If it does, then that gives us an opportunity to, you know, hopefully have an advantage in certain situations because of the scheme that we do and what they have to try to defend out of it instead of, hey, we're in one back zone this way or it's, you know, power or counter the other way. That's how we try to do it to give ourselves a chance each week.
Well, and you can use different quarterbacks in this system. It's not like a pure triple option system where your quarterback really is also a running back. Yeah. You know, Grayson McCall is one who you didn't initially, it didn't sound like you planned to start him going to spring last year. You had some older guys too, but he sort of rose to the top. And just how much did he allow you guys to open things up and do different things?
Well, he allowed us to open up tremendously because as a play caller, coordinator wise, you know, you're only calling plays you're comfortable that guy's going to execute. And, you know, if you feel like, man, he can't do certain things, then it limits you. Maybe you don't try the big plays because, hey, he's not going to make the right decision, et cetera. And having spring last year allowed Grayson to get some good reps and let us see, hey, he's got a chance. And then but it wasn't anything where he was unbelievable that spring. And then, he missed a lot of the summer because of being in quarantine. And then once we got into fall camp, he got an extra opportunity because one of our players got hurt a little bit. One of our quarterbacks got hurt, and he took off. I mean, his preparation, his desire to be the starter and be dedicated to it, doing those little things. He studied more during the summer, during the pandemic, during from March when we left to when we got back here in July. He studied more than all the other quarterbacks combined, based off of, you know, how you can, you know, you can monitor all that. And he was just detailed about what he wanted to become. And then once he got there, you're like, all right, we're going to have to, you know, not let the range slowly let the reins off of him. But after about week two or three, I was like, holy cow. I mean, he can do some things. And so let's go see what he can do. And because one, you know, maybe he is going to make some mistakes. And he didn't make many, truthfully. But even if he did, you felt like he's the type, like if he did something wrong, very next play, you don't even know it. Like he's just out there, you know, it never bothered him. And I think that's an unbelievable quality of a quarterback, is he had such a short memory. If he made a bad mistake, it didn't upset him. He didn't this or that. He just went out and did the next one. And there's, if you go back and look, we did this, any turnover he had, the very next series, we went and either scored. Wow. Now, we only had six turnovers. But we went and scored or did something every time we had that, which was ultimately impressive.
How did he handle the situation like the BYU game where, I mean, you're telling him early in the week, hey, we're probably not throwing a whole bunch and we need to hold the ball. How does he handle that? Because quarterbacks want to throw.
They do, you know, but he's great on that no matter what the situation, because he knows, you know, the thing that he knew, we trust him. Hey, and the thing he wants to do, he wants to win. And I think that's what the quality that he has there is, that, hey, he's going to do whatever. If he has to run the ball, we're not trying to run him much, but if he has to go try to do it, he'll do it. He wants the ball in his hands, but he trusts his team and trusts the people around. This is what we're going to have to do to try to make it play, to try to win the game, you know. And then it helped, you know, then, as I said, the next week we had to put in his hands because we needed to score some more points, and he's out there and we have to throw for a lot. But he is he's selfless from that standpoint. He wants to win. He'll do whatever it can to win. And I think our team, that's the personality they have as well. They know, hey, what we got to do to win the game. And you can see in different games, one game, I think we rushed for 400 yards versus one opponent, and maybe we threw for 200, you know. But they know we're trying to do what gives us the chance to go win and execute.
Let's go back to that Troy game, because that was one where they score with about a minute, was it less than a minute to go when they scored?
It was a minute, and I think it was a minute and 10 seconds or something.
Yeah, yeah. And so you're putting your offense back on the field. How confident are you in that group in that moment?
To be honest with you, 100% confident we were going to have a chance to go down and score. And the reason why, and I mentioned, you know, he had a turnover the series before. And
there you go.
That's right. made a bad decision, terrible decision. And tried to force something, and they got it, and they score. And so, one, I knew he'd go out and be locked in to, you know, make a play and do it. Now, did I think we might score a touchdown? No. I was like, hey, we're down three. We got a minute and something left. I think we had one timeout maybe. And so
you almost scored too fast.
Yeah, almost. You know, and so I was like, we're going to have time to at least get down there and hopefully tie it to try to get to overtime. We scored in four plays. We had the ball on 25-yard line because they kicked it off. We fair catched it or whatever it was. Slant for like 20, another pass, get the ball out of bounds for like seven. He rushes one for five, throws something else, and then it's touchdown. This like quick, and you're just sitting there. I mean, I was like, holy crap. I mean,
yeah,
simple. But he just, I mean, like he was 4 for 4 on the drive with one rush. It was unbelievable. And just precision, and he didn't get touched. And it looked like we were one of these spread teams that threw it 60 times a game, right? And
yep.
We actually hired one of the analysts from Troy, two of them, and they both are like when we scored there with, you know, a minute something ago, we're like, this is over. Y'all are an option team. Y'all are not going to go down the field. And he said we were all, our mouths were just like, what in the world's going on? You know, and so, but that's the beauty of having somebody that's not a runner, that's actually a athletic enough to do some of the run, because you feel like you can do what you need to do to win the game. And that game, we had to throw it quite a bit. And I think, you know, he showed up and played well.
We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors. So let's talk about the game where you did run it, and not necessarily the BYU game itself, which was fantastic and ended on a play that reminded me of the Super Bowl where the Rams tackled Kevin Dyson. Yeah. right at the goal line too. But that week, when that gets put, like, when do you first find out, hey, this might, because you were supposed to play Liberty that week, right? Mm-hmm. And you find, so you find out you've lost that game. When does the possibility of a BYU game come into play?
Well, we're practicing Wednesday, and I get off the for Liberty, and we get off the practice on Wednesday. Said, "Hey, are we playing BYU?" And I'm like, "No, not that I know of." I said, "You know, Liberty's supposed to be coming down here." Now, we'd heard rumors that they might have had, you know, COVID and all that, but nothing. Because I kept asking our AD, he's like, "No, we're playing." And so I call him, and he said, "Well, there might be a shot. We're going to see what happens." You know, I was like, "Huh." And so he said, "They're supposed to let us know something tomorrow." So we told our, you know, our GAs and stuff, just, hey, start getting some video just in case and start at least breaking some of it down. Well, Thursday morning we come in and, you know, you're trying to plan for your Thursday. And then he calls me and says, "Hey, they're making an announcement at 9:30 that Liberty's out and BYU's in." And so we found out basically about 8:30, 9 o'clock that morning. And then it was in. And so what we did, you're full bore trying to just get a base game plan together for them. And we still had to practice. It's not like we could push practice back too late, you know. And so, and we'd already practiced 3 days in your
right
and all that stuff.
Your so game plan's in.
You already done your physical work. And so what we did is we basically figured, you know, all right, this is who they are defensively. And we basically tried to take other game plans that they were similar to, you know, hey, they played a certain look. And hey, this team did that to us. And we just tried to cut and paste those plays that we'd done before. And Thursday was basically a walkthrough and introduction. Friday, we practiced. It wasn't in pads or anything, but we actually, all right, here's what we're trying to do. Here's how we're going to attack third down, or maybe what it is, because that's really what you were trying to figure out, is what are they going to do to you on third down and certain things from that standpoint. And then Saturday, we had another walkthrough in the morning, just trying to, here's what, you know, again, game day's going on, and we're out, you know, trying to figure all that stuff out. And we've still finalized the game plan, truthfully, Saturday. And that was what was crazy about it, is we're watching game day like you typically do, and we're finalizing the game plan. We all caught ourselves saying, hey, game day's right outside, you know.
They're right here. Yeah.
Yeah, they're out here. We just all went out there and looked, just like, hey, how cool is this? And so we had, you know, you had basically 48, you know, plus hours. And the thing is, you didn't want to burn the midnight oil on Thursday or Friday, then you're dead Saturday. Your coaches are just, you know, dead. And so who are they similar to that we played in certain ways? Let's take those plays. We've repped them and just, all right, this is what we're going to try to do, and hope what we do gives us a chance to, you know, win the game. We knew, like, there's only shot we're going to beat them from an offensive standpoint is we have to limit their opportunities, you know, defensively, that their quarterback. We have to try to limit that. And so that was part of the game plan going in, from, hey, how can we control the football?
And lo and behold, you already have this very basic tenet of your offense where if you want to, you can milk the play clock and do it. You know,
you can. That's
the thing I like about your offense, is it can be what it needs to be given the situation. That the folks who can only go fast or can only go slow, it feels like they're cheating themselves.
I would agree. We try. Now, are we the fastest team in the country? No. You know, when we go fast, we're not as fast as some of these teams that you've seen. But I do think we can operate in a fashion that's similar to what other people do. But I do think the beauty of what we do, because we can keep it. You know, if you look I think last year we ended top five, maybe top 10. I can't. In time of possession. This, the year before, we were very similar. And now you look at that going, well, what does that mean? Well, the way I look at that is, one, you control the ball, but two, that allows our defense to – we can play complementary football. When you go fast all the time, right, and you're scoring 40, 50 points, that's awesome. But your defense is probably giving up, you know, 30, 40 points as well, and you're winning those games or you're losing those. And so those are demoralizing. And so when you can play complementary football and you have – a great team on the opposing team, the great players here or there, if you can limit their touches, that helps you win games. And that's the statistic, you know, Andy, we really focus on, is what gives us the best chance to win the game. You know, this game, we're going to have to throw for 85 yards to do it, but we're going to win. And then when vice versa, and that's how we try to explain to our players, is we're going to do what it takes to win. And being able to go slower and milk the clock and do some of those things, it makes those other coaches antsy, especially those ones that like to get all those plays in, because you're getting limited touches, and they get over there and they're telling their defense to do this, do that. And, you know, and we're trying to milk it as much as we can. I think we led the country in drives of over 3 minutes or more last year. I might be wrong on that, but we were very high in 3 minutes or more drives.
But when you needed to score in 70 seconds, you did.
Exactly. So. You know, and I feel like we have the capability to have both because of, you know, because of the flexibility of the offense.
So I got to ask you this, because you've told me this story before, and I know our listeners will appreciate this and identify. So you grew up in Caryville, Tennessee, East Tennessee, in the mountain, kind of base of Jellicoe Mountain, for those mm-hmm. who know the geography. Tell me about going across state lines for barbecue.
Well, it was barbecue and lottery tickets at that time frame.
Well, exactly. That's
so,
right.
So you have to know why we went ultimately. And so, because Tennessee didn't have a, you know, state lottery at that time frame, and I'm talking, you know, early 90s and
yep,
and so, but when the lottery got pretty good size, you know, then you started thinking, hey, we're gonna win, you know, you start dreaming, and
absolutely.
So we were gonna make the trip, but then in Corbin, Kentucky, there was a Sonny's Barbecue, and that sweet sauce. That Sonny's sweet sauce calls your name, you know, and then it was all you can eat, right? All you can eat it.
Yep.
It was the pork at that time frame. And so our family trips, you know, during the 90s there, especially after I went to college, one of my teammates was from Santa Fe, Alachua County down there. And he knew Sonny personally, you know, and he'd bring all this Sonny.
This is Sonny Tillman, the founder of Sonny's Barbecue. And Sonny's gets a bad rap because chain barbecue has a bad rap. But Sonny's is from Gainesville, Florida. And yes, this is one of those where the all-you-can-eat pork, when I was in college, that's where we would hit there every Sunday night. Mm-hmm. Or, I'm sorry, Sunday was chicken. Sorry, chicken, Sunday yeah. was chicken. So we got the chicken on Sunday nights. Pork was either Monday or Tuesday. And we'd do that.
And it was on Saturday. In Corbin, it was on Saturdays.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we had a contest when I was in college. I was the dining critic at the student newspaper. Now, I didn't really do a lot of fine dining because I was broke. So I challenged the readers. I said, does anybody want to see if they can eat more Sonny's than me? And so this guy named Morgan, who had just finished a 2-year hitch in the Army, goes, I can. And I was like, yeah, right, whatever. You're about my size. I'm not intimidated. And so we meet up, and we got like, you know, 8 other people with us, and they all order all you can eat, but they're done after like 2 or 3 plates. Me and Morgan are just going. And the poor server, she's just going back and forth. She's like, now, do y'all just want me to bring like 4 or 5 at a time? Like, only if you tell us what the portions, if you're bringing me 4 or 5, we're trying to count here. So I finally get to plate number 13. I take my last bite of plate number 13. I put my fork down. I'm like, oh, my body was making some noises. And this guy, Morgan, has just finished his 15th plate. And he eats his last bite. He slams down his fork and he goes, I'm still hungry. And that's when I realized, I may not be the hungriest person in the world. Yeah. I might not be the world's biggest bar. this is too much for me. But yeah, the sweet sauce with the yellow cap was always the one we went for.
And it, then they moved one into Tennessee, and it didn't make it. I guess people in Tennessee to have too much of a fine dining.
They want their own barbecue.
They do. But it was some of my greatest memories from college teammates and everybody coming to my house, and we'd go there. It was some of the best memories we've had of having Sonny's trips to Corbin, Kentucky. And I hadn't eaten one in a long, long time, but every time I see a sign for one, especially down in Florida, you see one, it brings a smile to my face. In fact, I might need to go get me some sweet sauce.
There you go. Well, and we'll put some scratchers on it too. That's the thing. You get some lotto tickets and sweet sauce, and
it's a great day.
Take you right back.
That's a date night. So
that's exactly right. Well, Coach, it has been a pleasure. Thank you so much, and enjoy the being done with spring practice and getting ready for 2021 while everybody else is still catching up.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity today. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Coach.